Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to the Under Pressure podcast. I'm back to start the season off. Well, they did start the season off last week, but I get the first game to host. I should be hosting a few more this season, I hope. Let's see what happens. We've got today the B team, because I'm not part of the A team anymore. But yeah, we got the A team with the B host. So, Si, how you doing, bud? He didn't think I was coming to him first. That's why I did it, and he's on mute. Look, we just happen to have some.
He starts the season on you, amazing levels.
I thought for sure you'd come to me last. I'm eating pizza.
How illustrative of that of Liverpool's performance that Si starts the season on mute like we did in the first half.
And then with a mouthful of food.
And he's eating pizza after doing a nutrition podcast. Like, you know, it just not right, innit? Make sure you listen to that on Fatigue Index. Might as well get a plug in as I'm hosting. Dom, how you doing, bud? You okay?
I'm good, mate. I'm really good.
And Rhodesy, not too disappointed with the draw? We'll find out, I'm sure.
Well, a bit good with the draw, more the performance, though, which is what we're here for.
That's it. Let's talk about the performance. So, guys, how, Jesus, where do we start? We start where we normally start, and that's with lineups, Si. So, I don't think there was much option, really, with the injury, you know, list growing at Anfield. That kind of picks itself. Maybe Bobby and Nunes.
I think it that I was surprised by people don't get before the game that Darth was a little bit already going off about injuries, and then it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, really. But I don't think, I'm not sure any of our injured players before this game would have started this game.
Jota.
I think that is Jota, the first team started for the game.
Jota.
I don't know. Maybe Jota.
But there would have been a hell of a lot more options on the bench.
Yeah, 100%. But I'm just... Gags is talking about a starting 11. And I think this is pretty much a starting 11. You can Keita. Argue Bobby and Jota. No chance. Henderson was starting this game 100%.
I'm just saying that in some games this season, Keita was first choice. And so was
towards the end of the season, and there was always mitigation.
Anyway, let's not get bogged down in this.
There's no greater defender of Naby Keita. I want Naby Keita to start every game. My point is, this is a fully justifiable first team. This isn't an injury induced selection.
No.
Oh, so you're saying that's what the team is, and there is, you know, maybe you don't even think Nunes could have started.
But it wasn't down to injury, is my point.
No.
We weren't. This is the team that Klopp selected. It wasn't due to injuries. It was the team he would have selected. Maybe one argument.
But this is not just a good enough team to start the season. This is a team that's won leagues. This is a proper team, and I was very excited to start the game. Watching them, I think from a Fulham perspective, because we have to look at the opposition too. They dropped new players in from their championship winning side. Pereira came in to replace their best player, our lad Carvalho, and they had a lad at the back start. No, Paulinho in midfield started for them, who I thought was all right. But they were like fairly well rehearsed at the thing they did, and for I think it's the fourth season in a row we got the champions, the promoted champions in the first game, and this is the first 3, 4, 5 games of the season is where they're doing the things that they've got them to be champions in the first place, and they've yet to suffer the dip where they start to struggle, and it gets easier to beat those lads towards the middle of the season. And right, the first game of the season, it was unlucky to get them, and they were properly up for it. They did this specific thing tactically that they set up to do, and they did it well, and we didn't. And that's generally what happened.
And the game plans from Liverpool then? We just didn't do it?
Well, no, I think we didn't start very well. If we're going to talk specifically about the tactics stuff, I think my guess is we expected it to be a little bit easier than it was. We weren't fully engaged and switched on and with a heightened
complacency,
sense of arousal.
Mm.
And they were fully at it, and it surprised when we were trying to knock the ball around at the back. If you look at the first 5 minutes of the game, that they had the highest of presses, and we were just managing to get out of their press, but the ball was getting lost. So there was, there were 22 transitions in the first 5 minutes, and like they were losing the ball, they were making us lose the ball. Then they were losing the ball, they were making us lose the ball. It was basketball, but it wasn't basketball end to end. It was just basketball in the middle of the pitch. There's so many aerial duels in the first 5 minutes. Well, first 20 minutes, the ball was in the air so much. And it was just from their incessant pressure. And I think we're trying to figure out this new evolution of the bloody right side at eight again, as seems to be our main source of evolution every season. And if you watch, we dropped into a double pivot in midfield every time we had possession. And we're doing this fancy thing where the fullbacks invert to, because we have to copy City. And Henderson was released as the 10. And we kind of did a little bit of this towards the end of last season with Naby, but not really. Not as very obviously. As soon as we got possession, Henderson ran 15 yards ahead of Fabinho and Thiago, and both took round. So they were playing as a box with the two centre backs, and it played directly into Fulham's hands in that they played five. They played a box with Mitrovic pressing. So they made sure that Fabinho was blocked off, and then the pass into Thiago was blocked off. So our defenders had nowhere to go with their passes.
I agree. I completely agree with that. Yeah, and I don't think the role suited Hendo either, but we can talk about that in a bit.
Also, Gags, to just touch on, this would have been a really good game to analyse Fulham's pressing, wasn't it? You know, like we did with the United one last season.
Yeah, I thought they got Trent early on. And then, obviously, I think then after that, though, we made a lot of mistakes without presses as well. But we can talk about those later. We'll stick with you, Rhodes, the match summary, mate.
Yeah, what an interesting match summary this one is. Considering how bad the performance was, 11 shots to 9 in our favour, which is pretty poor against a promoted side. 3 shots on target each and 9 shots to 7 in the box, again in our favour. But 4 big chances to 1. Obviously, we removed their penalty, so the non-penalty XG turned out at 2.1 to 0.5, again in our favour. That's massive, 1.6 difference. Shot quality of ours was nearly 20% and theirs was 6%. So considering how bad we were and how good they were, they didn't create much. Their only big chance was the penalty. But I think the key for this is when our chances came, because after 59 minutes, we had 0.1 XG. So after Nunes came on, we created 2 XG, which is huge. And on understat, it's even more than that. It's nearly 2.4 XG on understat, which 2.4 XG after an hour is I don't think we've ever done that much. So it's such an interesting counter to how bad the performance was. The stats line looks really good. And it's hard to suggest that we shouldn't have won when you have four big chances. But obviously we're going to come on to the intricacies of the chances and whether they were vital or not. And we did hit the post twice, but I had a couple of lucky deflections for a couple of the chances and the goal. And Fulham also hit the inside of the post and could have gone 2-0 up there. So after an hour, we could have been 2-0 down. But then once Nunes came on, it was a different game.
Yeah, completely agree with that. And I think what you said there when you broke down the XG and you split it over periods, we're going to do that now. So let's discuss the game up to the subs. So we normally do first half, second half sometimes, but let's do it all the way up until the 50th minute, I suppose. So, you know, Darth, good point, good part to bring you in here.
Yeah.
This was not a good first half, first 50 minutes of a Premier League season for Liverpool. Probably one of the worst ones we've seen since West Brom.
Yeah.
Back in Rodgers' first game.
Well, it was pretty grim. And what I was going to say was, you know, you mentioned the question that, you know, could Darwin have started? Si made a brilliant observation on this last year, this pod last season, where there is a choice between two players, Klopp will always pick the most experienced individual. That's kind of one of his default modes he goes to. So in that respect, it didn't surprise me that Firmino was given a nod. And I think if Jota was fit, Jota would definitely have started. Definitely. However, Bobby now is not the same as Bobby, you know, two, three years ago, 4 years ago was his peak probably. But even when we used to play that way and the 4-3-3, the classic 4-3-3 gags, we did plenty of games where we came up against low block defences and we were ineffective. And that false nine role with Salah and Mane, even then, in some games where the opposition played a good solid defence, compact and stuff, we struggled, didn't we, Gags? We've seen plenty of these games.
Yeah, we've seen loads of them, and I think this manager's played this before as well.
Yes,
so he knows. You know, he's been successful against us before as well. So
he did. He had a good record. He had a decent record. In the early days, yeah.
He made sure the keeper was kicking it out. If you go and have a look at their pass map, on any of the apps that provide the pass maps, there's very little passing going on outside their box. Very little. It's from their box.
Yeah,
mainly, and maybe a little bit towards the right or left hand side, but otherwise they are just going long. So that point about Bobby earlier, he's literally got no use because his game is press, right?
Yeah,
his game is to get and he was successful for one, but it went to Hendo, and he basically just played it to them. Back to them. Yeah. We had like four players attacking against three or against two, and we messed it up. But that literally, that was the only thing Bobby did that was positive in the whole half. And so when the opposition is going to be playing like this, you know, we should have expected it. That was a bit loose, I think, from Pep and Klopp this time. Yeah, because they should have expected this from him.
Remember,
he'd played him before.
When Jota plays the 4-3-3 in the middle, he doesn't play it like Bobby does. He doesn't drop off into, you know, he becomes the focal point. So we still have, even when Jota plays it, we typically have a centre forward in the 4-3-3 rather than Bobby dropping behind the two wide players. And so, you know, that would have provided Fulham different.
And then if you've got two
challenges,
false nines or two tens, and the other one is Hendo next to Bobby, it just didn't work, mate.
No, I mean, yeah, we need to talk about Hendo's distribution and where his passing and the type of passing he can make. you know, at some point, on, you know, I'll probably leave that to Si, but, you know, not as the second most central creative attacking player. No, I guess I don't think he's ever been that player, has he?
Not in my mind.
You effectively had, where you look at his, where he received the ball, he was in his touches in the first half were in the position of a 10, but he's not a 10.
No, it's like a shoehorning of a player into a position that doesn't suit them.
Yeah. So I think this question to be said, did we get it wrong? Did go in the default 4-3-3 with the false nine? Was that the wrong tool for the job? That's all I'd say.
Well, Klopp himself said it. I'm not, and this was quotes after the game, and he was pretty strong in terms of his suggestions. But he said, "I'm not exactly sure what I did wrong in the last week, but between City and today, something happened, and we play this kind of game. We better not do that again." It's brutal.
Well, he's obviously the hairdryer coming out. That's good.
Right? He's blaming himself, but also going, "What were you doing, lads? What? There was nothing for the first hour in particular."
Yeah, I mean, you can talk about the intensity, but there was a lot of talk about we weren't at it in terms of the physical battle and the intensity in the first half. I mean, guys, you collected it. What did you think? I mean, no, the pressing was hot at the start.
Yeah, but dude, it's all in our own half.
Yeah.
There was nothing to press. You know, like we always talk about opportunity. No. There was no opportunity in any.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I just mean general of the intensity of the team. There was a lot of criticism.
Oh yeah, yeah. We were like, there was loads of group presses, and there was loads of success from group presses as well. It's not an issue, but it's got to be in the right places, right? They played it. They were pressed in the places. I think Si nailed it at the start, where he was like, you know, we were winning the ball back, but then we were giving it away. And then they were pressing high as well. And our boys didn't expect it. People like Trent were getting a bit frazzled at the start, giving it away in really stupid areas. And that puts us under the pressure. That gives their crowd a lift. All of it matters at the end of the day. All of it goes with the flow of the game. Once they're up, they've got that little bit of extra confidence. They're going to put even more in. And then that other player they had, Paulinho, whatever his name is, he was all over Bobby. Yeah. That was really good from them. But Bob was giving the ball away so badly as well, dude. We just couldn't keep it. If you've got two players that are trying to run your game, 1 minute, sorry, Darth.
Yeah.
If you've got two players that are being your nines and they're supposed to connect it all together and they're giving the ball away.
Yeah.
At every opportunity. And that's Bobby and Hendo, by the way. That's you're not going to get anywhere. And that's why in that half, Salah was non-existent. Non-existent. You can't have that happen in a Premier League game. In any game, he woke up as soon as, and we'll get to Salah in the second half, and you know why he woke up.
Yeah. Just before we move on, though, because I think the most damning thing for Bobby was that Andreas Pereira, who is not that good a player, basically looked like peak Bobby from 5 years ago. He was outstanding in the press-in. And he constantly got in behind Fabinho and Thiago, and he causes no end of problems. He's a really basic, limited player, isn't he, Gags? And, you know, but Bobby, in comparison to Pereira, was a shadow, wasn't he?
I don't want to keep saying stuff, but look, because I feel bad, but at the end of the day, you had two midfielders, and in the end, Thiago was awful in this game. Like,
and they were both
completely. I didn't think. I actually rewatched it, and I thought Fab was just bypassed because he had so much to cover. You know, remember the Arsenal game back in the day where everybody said Fab was shit? Literally, he played one bad pass in this game, Fab, right? And everybody has jumped on him because he got subbed. But I think they just needed the ball more. And literally, he didn't get the ball. They didn't pass it to him. He was all the passing lanes, like Si said, were blocked off. Fulham did a great job. But we had two midfielders and one. Thiago probably had his worst game in a red shirt. His worst. He was standing on the ball at fucking kickoffs. It was terrible. It was like, what are you doing? He couldn't pass. He couldn't do anything right. You know, and that's not Thiago. We love Thiago, dude. Like, we're not shitting on someone for no reason. But the point is, if there's two of them, because one was on walkies up the pitch, giving the ball away, and then there's two behind, and they have to cover, like Si said as well, it was just a mess. The whole system was a mess. Yeah, and so. I can't have Fab. I'm not saying that because I love him, and I do. His pressing is way down. Like, on last 2 years, a year and a half, Fab's pressing is way down. Like, really low in comparison to levels before that, the 2 years before. I don't know whether that's a switch in Klopp's tactics, but Fab isn't doing what he used to do from a pressing perspective. So that's one of my gripes with him. But otherwise, I didn't think he was that bad. I thought he was bypassed, and I thought he had to cover loads of ground, and the ball was just going round him. Simple. Really
is
simple.
Is it because, like Sean mentions there in the chat, is it because the two in front of him, or maybe the five in front of him, aren't doing the job properly? And so he's exposed more, and then obviously pressing because he's aggressive.
He's made to look
exposed because he's on his own with a load of space.
How many times did we give the ball away in stupid areas? The flipping penalty is given away by a stupid pass as well. This game is literally 2016-17 Liverpool, where we just constantly lost the ball in transition, and then we were punished. Well, we didn't really get punished in this, but you know what I mean. We were backtracking, so we looked shit.
Well, the good news is that Sai's got his possession control stats already for the match, as he always does. I mean, and I think it's the best. It's the best. We should probably remind ourselves of what the possession control is.
What was Bobby's possession control, Sai, for this first half?
First of all, what is it, Sai? How do you collect it?
Oh, possession control is basically the number of times you win the ball. So recoveries, aerials, interceptions, tackles, any of that. Against the number of times you lose possession, so whether you get past two, however you manage to get possession, however you lose, the number of times you lose, so it can even be an off target shot, or a missed control, a loss of possession, or a missed pass. So it's what you it's basically the quantity and quality of the thing you do with the ball in retaining possession for the team. And Bobby had, in his 50 minutes on the pitch, he had minus nine. So he lost the ball nine times more than he won it for Liverpool, in 50 minutes, that's what Mo is doing. When he's threading passes through the final third, and in return, that's something you hope for. No, that's something you're willing to exchange, basically, for a really high XG chain or expected threat, as we would put it these days. And Bobby's XG chain was 0.02, which is literally the lowest outfield player in the team. So he was giving the ball away in the middle of the park with no upside. There was the reward just didn't exist, and there was significant risk. But it wasn't just Bobby, but it was, do you know that I went through this data, and this game Fulham had Fulham intercepted 6.9% of all our passes, which is the highest percentage of any opposition against Liverpool for 2.5 years.
Wow, great stat.
We just give the ball away all the time. So they forced us down the middle. If you look at the number of... I'm not on board with stats bomb switches, because they were bullshit. They're just not true anywhere near the number of... I think they had 39 switches of play in this game. It doesn't match up to what I was seeing or Opta's data.
Just on that one side,
their definition.
No. Yeah, it has. It doesn't have to be the full width of the pitch. It only has to be 30 meters lateral, one way or the other, or the other to be
right. So Opta have 8 in this, and we're typically around between 16 and 21 attempted switches a game. And we just, so basically, Fulham tactically stacked the box, is how we would say it in a game perspective. They created a box in the middle of the pitch, which was the width of the penalty area. They created a tunnel, and we didn't go round that tunnel at all. We just allowed them to play right in between the two penalty areas. So we condensed the pitch by 30 metres, ostensibly.
So they had 10 players block 30 metres. So instead of dropping off to the edge of the box, which is what Burnley would do, or any of the old English Grok defend coaches, was to proceed up the pitch and then block it off. What they did was, they just basically, it was like a syringe. They just created this tube, and then they just moved forward to us, which just condensed the space even further, and we tried to punch the ball through them, and they just kept picking it off.
Really, yeah, it was a shock that we were so, you know, we lacked that press resistance. It was just a shock.
It wasn't just the press resistance, that it was the problem solving. The thing that will make Klopp most crazy is that those people on the pitch who are supposed to be, there are leaders all over our pitch, but the thing that sets Liverpool apart is that they're cerebral footballers as well as being really intense physical Goliaths, right? So they will run you into the ground, but we also can beat you because we are smarter than you. If you set us a tactical problem, we will figure a way of solving it. And it was, and the thing is that it's like we started the game with a hammer in our hand, and every tactical problem we see, we turn into a nail. Because we got a hammer, we just trying to whack it like it was a nail when they weren't presenting a nail. And we never managed to switch, even at halftime, a little bit the way we played, and until Harvey came on with his own little pocket knife, Swiss Army knife.
Sorry, two good switches in the first half both led to something good.
We managed to get through because we were doing the same thing over and over again, and we didn't switch. And the way you move this syringe, this tunnel, you have to move it laterally, side to side. And we tried two switches, and we got in and made two chances both times. It was insane that we didn't carry on doing that. I don't know what. It was definitely a mental issue more than a physical one. Another stat while we're going. Sorry, Darth. Another stat while we're banging stats on. We had more recoveries in this game than anybody else in the league all weekend. So it wasn't down to our intensity.
No, not at all.
Interesting though. That's counterintuitive to watching it.
No. If you collected it, you wouldn't have thought that though. Because they did press enough. I mean, the 125 odd presses off of what little passes they made is a lot, you know. Yeah, but so you do break it up, and there was, like I said, a lot of possession wins there as well. So at the end of the day, we got the ball back a lot. It's what we did with it. What did we do with it? Until 50 minutes, we had two excellent pieces, like Si said. There was so much opportunity, mate, to try, but we just had a weird. Really weird. They went blank.
Can I guess just say, I thought it was really interesting what you said there, Si. So basically, maybe we misread Fulham's game plan before the match. We weren't really well versed on what Fulham were going to do. And then once the game started, we didn't adapt at all until one of our players picked up an injury and we were forced to change, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly... I'm fairly sure that's exactly what happened. If you... Like one of the extreme stats in this game, so that the interception stat like jumped out at me. The second one is Mitrovic had 50 touches from a team that had 354 touches in the game. Their centre forward got 50 touches. The thing that they were doing, they were basically emptying straight to him, and at no point did either of our centre backs say, "Right, I'll just go and mark him." We still carried on doing the thing we do zonally. He was wandering all over like, but basically he was playing like Bobby. He was dropping into holes all the time. And because of the change throughout midfield, so when we have possession, we dropped into a double pivot. And when we didn't, we pressed how we would with eights either side with Fab theoretically dropping deeper. But because the ball was going in the air all the time, he was working as a screen, right on the toes of the centre backs, which just allowed always a little bit of space behind both eights. And he was just dropping in there all the time. He had so much space. I've never seen a centre-forward... Well, sorry, I've not that I've never, but I've not seen a centre-forward dominate possession of the opposition from how little possession they had with the quality that he has. It was like watching Shearer. It blew my mind. And at no point did either of our lads, who were both easily physically as dominant as him, they could have just gone and had a fight with him. Neither of them stepped out to do it.
The only midfielder that pressed him as well was Hendo, which is the weird thing. Like,
but I don't want either of them pressing him. I want the centre-back to go with him.
They did. The centre-backs pressed him, yeah, seven times out of the 12.
Just to evidence what Si said there, Mitrovic was involved in 14 aerial duels. He won 11 out of 14. But Joel Matip was 0 out of 4 in the match, and Van Dijk was 3 out of 3. Van Dijk didn't get involved with Mitrovic enough. Like you said, Mitrovic was almost like bossing our other players who weren't Van Dijk and Matip so much, you know? So it's a fair point. You know, we don't break the zonal pattern, do we, Si, at the back to make exceptions for anybody?
Nope, that's it. That's your side, this is my side. You attack,
I would have bossed him. Canate would have bossed him. Anyway, so 50. Anything else before we go to the?
I just wanted to say the thing that really annoyed me when I was doing the analysis and watching the extended highlights back, Gags, was the way that we made three championship players in Tete, Cabano, and Harrison Reed look like, you know, Brazil 1970, not far off anyway, because I just don't understand how they were allowed to dominate. They were really, if you look at the average positions of all three players, they're all the right winger is extremely high, continually behind in Robertson, and the right back's average touches are really advanced in the field. But we couldn't impose our game on them enough to exploit that the risk that the Fulham were taking on their right. And I just don't understand why our left side was so, what's the word, I'm guessing, passive? I don't know, ineffective? Did you see something that Fulham were doing, guys, that would made, you know, Diaz and Robbo, basically, they pushed us back and we could never get on the front foot?
It was just weird. We did it a couple of times first half, like Si said. And then after that, we just didn't try until in the second half, where we started playing some balls from that right channel into the towards the central areas. I mean, Diaz was quiet second half as well, wasn't he?
Mm.
I mean, apart from the shot he had when he came into the box, literally, it's like we've stopped playing down the left hand side or something. It was really weird.
But do you remember that game against Villarreal where we couldn't get any foothold in the game at all, and then Diaz basically comes on and he basically just goes and bombs basically left, you know, down the left wing towards the corner flag against their right back and pushes Villarreal back and lets us get established in the match. And you know, this game was crying out for us to do something similar.
Robbo didn't have his best game either, mate.
No, and Thiago was, as we said, was off colour as well. And
I think you're all being really harsh about Thiago. I just don't see how he was terrible.
Okay. What about the left side? Did you see any?
I thought that they were brave in how high they kept Cabano.
Right? Yes.
So what that did was it fucked with Robbo's timing of when to be aggressive and when not to. There's like a lack of synchronicity right now on that left hand side, because Diaz is still a street baller, and his best game for us, I think, were when he came on and he was made to go and play left wing, and now he's playing like Mane. So you look at his touches were nearly all in like zone 13 and the edge of zone 14. They were all like their left half space, and even towards the middle, him and Bobby were just playing interchanging on the left side of the centre of the goal, and there was nobody out wide other than the occasional, I think four times maybe Robbo went out there, and they wanted us right in the middle, and he kept going right in the middle all the time. And if he'd have stayed, I hate Jermaine Genius because he's a prick, but he made one salient point about the width of the wingers. He was wrong about Salah, because Salah played wide the whole game until the good bits of the second half where he came in a little bit. But like Diaz, he was just I he feels 15 metres too narrow to the goal. And I wonder if it's part of the thing we talked about, you know, pre-season with Diaz, in that he's this phenomenal street baller. He can do amazing stuff off the cuff. And if you leave him alone, he'll get 10 goals that are brilliant. That might be game changers in the game. But the thing he's missing is the tactical understanding of where he should be at what time and when to make tactical runs. Yeah. And so one of the things he doesn't get is easy chances in the box. Yeah. Because he's just in slightly the wrong position, because he's waiting for the ball instead of dominating without the ball.
Instead of anticipating.
Yeah. That's just not his game. And I wonder if he's been tasked with this specific role, a reduced version. We've done this before with lots of players that have come in. We've given them a condensed version of the thing that we're going to expand tactically into. And I wonder if part of this condensed role of being Mané is to stay in a 10-metre channel. Instead of going wide and stretching their fullback, it's to stay there, because if he is within this condensed channel, he is much closer to the goal where for making the runs off the centre-back, and for when, so he can be a finisher. Because we need our wide players to be finishers. And if we allow him to be the street baller on the line, then he has to have Darwin inside him, because Bobby won't be in the goal either. So I wonder if it's a function of that rather than anything he's doing wrong. I think maybe they've just limited his role until he learns it well enough to expand. And what we were missing was Robbo going past him, and he couldn't because Kempembe, or whatever his name is,
Cabano,
there you go. Cabano was staying so high, so it limited Robbo coming forward.
I mean, I guess I'll just to wrap this bit up, Gags, I guess the other thing is that other opposition teams now have enough video of Diaz at Liverpool to know. So the shock factor there from his first few months is no longer there. So they are going to adapt to him and play him differently.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn, you know, with Diaz. Still, it's still fresh, still new. And he's got to get used to playing down that side with the other boys, you know. So just this, I think it all came to a head in this one, everything. Anything else?
But do you not think it was really positive, though, that when Darwin came on, it changed?
Oh, yeah, let's go there now. Let's go there. That's it. Kick it off. So it was amazing. It was literally immediate as well.
But I wasn't talking in the grand scheme of the game. I'm just talking from Diaz's role, because now you had a different focal point. He didn't have to be the lad that was furthest up the pitch, the one that was running behind. He had a different one, so now he could be a connector. It's much closer to his natural street ball. You know, he could be deeper. He could be a guy that's going to connect and run at defenders rather than do the stuff off the ball that he has to learn. So it just, I think... just literally the function of Darwin being on the team, it makes Diaz better. It makes Diaz feel better.
And that's why we probably need to start him soon, just to see what we get out of all three up top. Because you say Diaz, Mo just looks an animal when Darwin's on the pitch. He looks like an animal. I don't think I've ever seen him. Like, we've seen Mo, but this is a different version of Mo. Like, it excites me even more. When he's got someone to play off of, I think
you think how much Nunes stretches the pitch and how much space that creates, and also how many players he occupies. It's almost like Mo's wet dream, isn't it? You know, to have a player like that.
It is. He just seems so much more on it. He seems alive, and then you add someone like Elliot into the midfield as that connector on the right side, and all of a sudden things just look like they're pinging the ball about with each other, you know, with Trent as well. It's just much more fluid. It just felt much more, there was a click. And then with the option of Darwin in there, you got Trent trying to cross field to him, and there's a target now making things happen. Yeah, Darwin gets a bit lucky with a lot of things, but you make yourself sometimes that luck, and I think you panic defenders, and then you get lucky with those little bubbles and shit, don't you? Because it's panic stations.
I mean, one of the things that we did say on the Nunes signing pod, which me and Rosie incited as it was with Bart, is that, you know, it does give the option of playing the 10. And one of the I think the second player we picked for the options for the 10 was Salah. So they basically get Salah centrally in behind Darwin. And Si was very excited by that prospect, that's for sure.
They were right. It's happening. He ends up right next to him sometimes, like the goal. Yeah. Literally, it's going to happen. And that's what happens when Elliot comes on, because he can then shift into that right side.
Well, Elliot played very wide, didn't he, a lot of it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just connecting. They're just connecting, doing triangles in the corners. You know, it just was, like I said, it just makes the team just look completely different. Had that mistake not been made by Matip with the pass, this game was going to be 1-3-4-1. Honestly, they were so up against it at that point, Fulham. Let's go to the goal. You know, let's go to a couple of chances before the goal, Rhodesy, I think.
Yeah. We can discuss the Mitrovic first goal. I think we should start there and then move on to the others. But I think it's crucial to analyse that one because Trent came in for a lot of criticism, didn't he, for that? And I think in the emotion of the game, I was critical. But in the cold light of day watching it back, it's just absolute quality striking, isn't it? Trent does try and jump. And I think Dave mentioned this on the Raw podcast. You can't jump if a 6'2", 14 stone striker has jumped before you and timed it perfectly. I saw a few Liverpool fans saying it's a foul on Trent. Oh, it's just not, is it? It's just really good anticipation. It's a great cross.
I think the foul was on Hendo, mate, further up.
Yeah, that's absolutely a foul.
Mitrovic must have scored about 15 goals like that in the Championship last year.
The cross is unbelievable as well, right?
Yeah, really good.
You've got to stop that cross. You got to, when you know Mitrovic is in it, you got to stop that cross.
It's nearly all nonsense because there's just a narrative that Trent can't defend outside a Liverpool fan, and therefore anything that feeds that narrative is consumed. So that's all it is. We just have to accept it, even though we know it's nonsense. Because I'm not going to blame Trent for not winning a duel against a bona fide centre forward.
Yeah, and I was critical while I was watching it, but I think when you, like Rhodesy said, when you look back, he's got the charge on him as well. You know, that's someone running like that at you, you haven't got a chance. You haven't got a chance. Unless you're sprinting to it yourself as well. But I think you don't expect the ball to be that perfect sometimes.
Could Alisson have done better? Because it went in at his near post, just above his hand. And it seems like it didn't quite extend himself enough to prevent that. But I don't know. I think I'm being harsh there. Anyone?
Yeah, let's move on.
So
Ali could have saved it. He it's not a goal he should have saved, but Ali could have saved it. It's a point two post shot. It's not like the greatest in the world, but he's got to cover the whole goal as he's travelling across the goal really quickly because it's across the opposite side.
Exactly.
I think there's an example here of the street baller again. If I was a Fulham fan, I would be absolutely raving about Tete, who sprinted from his own box and was the lad by the corner flag putting the cross in, right? But Diaz had 20 meters on him, and he ran straight past him, and he ended up 60 meters away from goal while this lad was putting the cross in. At any point, he could have tracked him. He could have blocked him off, which is actually his job. He should have just blocked him off. And he didn't, and he ended up with nobody running with him at all. And another thing that I don't know me saying I would do this because that's crazy. I'm not Jurgen Klopp, but one of the alternate tactical setups in this is that there's one striker. So if there's one striker you're playing against, and there's one striker in the box, you make sure that one of the centre-backs is tasked with picking up the striker when he's in the box.
100%.
And Matip had him when he was in the penalty area, and could overread, I think, ran across Trent, and then Matip passed on Mitrovic, and he should have just gone with him. And I'm not blaming Matip. That would be a tactical consideration from the boss. That's all. That's how Liverpool was set up to do this. It wasn't Matip's fault, and he had a big run. I think I love Trent. I'm a huge defender of Trent. This wasn't Trent's fault. Trent still didn't do very well, but I don't think he could have done anything about it anyway. I don't think he jumped. I don't think he made himself as physical as he could. I still don't think it would have made any difference.
Let's go on to the Nunes stuff then, because that half an hour was pretty impressive.
Yep, let's do it. Darth,
I just set up the negative stuff, right? So you guys can run away with the glory of the magnificent human that he is. I would like to punch him in the face when he is trying another backheel flick instead of just putting the ball in the fucking corner. The first chance he got, it really wasn't a hard chance, and he had 3 meters to aim for. He was inside the near post. He could have just taken it with a side foot into the bottom corner and he'd have scored. He went for the glory of doing a little back flick, and he fucked it up.
But you know what?
And then he fluked it the second time by literally missing it, and it got bobbled off the other off the centre back onto his foot. Like, that's just one of my bugbears.
I know.
1,000 times.
It's a fair bugbear. But what I love about it is the confidence. Like, you know, he was struggling with confidence in his first game in the Prendies, right? But to now be attempting shit like this on the first game of the season just shows a big jump from where he was to what he's doing. And
I know exactly what you're saying. And you will,
I like that. You know what I mean? I like that.
But you will have remembered me saying the same stuff about Diaz. Stop not looking at the bloody ball when you make the pass.
Yes.
Make sure the pass goes to the person you fucking aim it for.
Yeah, and you know what?
So it's great that you're confident, right? If the thing you're attempting to do cockily goes in, that's brilliant. But if it doesn't, you're a twat.
So this type of stuff at 2-3-0 is okay. When you're losing, just tap it in, lad. Yeah, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly that.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. But I do admire the confidence, for sure. I love it, in fact. Darth, your view on that. And also, you know, he had, I think, yeah, talk about the goal. Talk about Assai's already, I mean, you know, ruined it for us with the bubble. But yeah, it was nice lead up, Matip into Milner into Elliot. All very, very nice.
Yeah. Elliot,
yeah. Yeah. Well, even the Matip pass, like I'll kill him later on, obviously, because but to get the goal, the breaking of the lines from Matip was fantastic in this. So it was a proper mixed bag from him on the ball. Proper mixed bag. But he was involved in creating this goal. And then Milner's pass into Elliot was wonderful. Elliot's pass vision is beautiful. And then Mo, he's just awesome at finding the right pass into the space for a striker. And also, the one thing that we lack in the box, Darth, is someone running front post. Always you see Divock running to the fucking foul.
Yeah.
Right when Divock was dying. But fucking man, probably never anywhere near anything. But this guy overtakes the number four, their number four, comes in front of him, and then has the time to fucking do this as well. But, you know, just tap it in next time. But yeah, I get Sai's point. But still, there was something to admire about, something that we don't see often.
The thing I like about him is about, I'm not going to get into involved in any of the confidence debates or any of the quality of his shooting or anything like that. The fact that he gets in the box and he creates absolute mayhem, and he gets in the box at an extraordinary rate. Right, he had the most penalty box touches in the team. He had 8 in this match. He was only on the pitch for 42 minutes, and he had 4 shots. And including the 37 minutes he played against Man City, he's had eight shots in the box in 82 minutes, and 6 big chances and 2 goals.
Glorious stats.
So, right. So I don't really care about all the other stuff, right? If he can get in the box, when he start, if you can get somebody getting 8 shots per 90, which is not going to sustain, by the way, you know, but if you can get somebody doing that and creating and getting so many touches inside the opposition box, plus he's won a pen, right? Plus he created a chance for Diaz in this match with that good headed layoff, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he got an assist for the Salah goal. So, you know, he just makes stuff happen. is absolute chaos. Who was it on the one of the pods used the phrase "agents of chaos"?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if it was Harry or
I think
or
Dave Diaz calls him the Big Shagger. It's beautiful, honestly. He just fucking just
he's just
fucks things up.
Yeah,
just goes in and just
so that's it. You know, if you can get into these positions, we'd struggled so much. We'd be like all match the first 53 minutes. We'd be like the tide crashing upon the rocks of the Fulham defence, and then he has 3 shots in a 6-yard box in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Fucking nuts.
And also, Dan, and this is the key, we all remember Gerrard's like 8 shots against Chelsea in that second half, all outside the box. There's a difference between 8 shots and had six.
And most of them are in the 6-yard box.
And that was the biggest thing we were saying for Mo, right? We wanted Mo to have these shots because he was playing out wide towards the second half of the season and stuff, and even Mane wasn't getting many and Bobby's never there. And this guy comes in, 80 minutes, he's had 8.
Right, there's a really good stat that Beast posted on TTT the other day, and this is, in contrast to what Nunes has done, unbelievable. Liverpool starting central forwards managed 15 shots in the 6-yard box last season. All season, Jota had 8, Mane 4, Bobby 3. We know about Jota's shot location map. It's a thing of beauty. Nunes is creating something of a different level now. That is, you can't, 15 shots all season, and then Nunes has 3 within 10 minutes. It's hard to explain if he carries
it's
on.
It's hard not to get excited as well.
If he carries on at that level, which he's not going to, but even if he has 2 a game inside the 6-yard box, because we've got such good creators and passers of the ball, which we have, not particularly in this game in the first hour, but we have. And then Moore's doing that because he's getting the space because they're watching Nunes. It's really exciting, even though we're coming off the back of a 2-2 draw with a promoted side. It's
Rhodesy's got to start at Anfield. He's got to start Anfield. He's going to get so many chances at Anfield.
In terms of analysis,
yeah,
you would be excited as one of the Liverpool post match analysts. So yeah, it's
wild. Honestly, watching the game back from when he came on was so much. It was such a pleasant watch. Such a shame that we just made a mistake. You know, this, like I said, it's going back to 2016-17. Our mistakes cost us in this. Simple, you know.
Yeah,
we made
a mistake.
Can you
go on, Si?
I was going to say, you're like Darwin. Yeah, brilliant. I think he's going to be amazing. You might be right, and I was completely wrong about the number because I expected Bobby to be better. But
it's only one game.
Exactly. But go back to the beginning of what we were talking about tactically, the problem tactically with this game and how we didn't solve a problem, and look at all of the chances that we created, right? So we missed Diaz's in the first half, which was the one time he was outside the fullback and he ran at the fullback and slammed the bar. Yeah. So he was coming from outside the
and
fullback.
And there was the offside goal as well from him as well. That was it.
Yeah. And if you look at, you're talking about Darwin, but they were both from the shots in the 6-yard box. They were from Mo crosses. From where? They were getting wide into the hot zone. And like we weren't attempting to get wide into those zones. It's not like on the touchline. It's a matter of getting the ball into either some space or you get isolated coming from wide to narrow. And once we figured a way of getting the ball into those zones, it created everything.
Yeah, we only had Robbo's in the first half that he fluffed, guys, that he really smashed across the goal, which he should have maybe side-footed and we would have had a Diaz tapping. But that was the only one side that we had in the first half where we got someone in space in the box to cross it in.
Which came from a Trent switch. Yeah, right.
Yeah. That was it. Apart from that, it was almost.
Isn't it because Nunes is doing something completely opposite to what Firmino was doing or not doing? Because if Fulham's defence can control the game by nullifying Firmino, whereas Nunes comes on and then causing havoc. In his very special way that he seems to do it, and then there's a space for Salah, but that space from Salah comes from really good fed balls from Elliott or Milner, which Henderson wasn't doing. Henderson drops back into the six, and then you've got Helen. And it was like it came together after that.
For sure. But we talk about spacing all the time, right? And the goddamn half space and the like, whatever the how people talk about positioning. All spaces aren't equal. All people filling those spaces aren't equal, right? So in the first half, we had Trent filling in as a centre forward. And very often, I think there may be five occasions where our front line had our forwards in that five-man front line with decent spacing. And the three most forward players of that front line were Diaz kind of on the left-ish, Henderson as the centre-forward, and Trent as the inside as the right-side forward. So are defenders going to be... Are they equal to having... Diaz, Darwin, and Mo as those three forwards? Does it make the defenders behave similarly? Like, literally getting those threats in those positions, and if you can rotate them in and out of those positions, even better, but if you're getting them in those positions, it causes both uncertainty, but it's also, it causes a pressure point.
For sure.
You have to have these. You can't, like, this. I don't want to see... It's not that I don't want to see Jordan Henderson to the box. That's not the thing. You were talking about right at the beginning about him positioning. Where in 13-14, he did the third man run of a 10 perfectly well. And he was a threat, and he created carnage in the box because he was running from deep into the box. Great, a lifetime ago. But no, my point is not that he can't do it. I don't want him in the team, but it's there. It's different from him standing with the centre-backs. Darwin standing with the centre-backs. They are shitting themselves because he's going to run in behind them. And he's going to run really quickly. Or he's going to out-muscle them. So it completely changes that.
You're right. It gives us such a great option on predictability as well. So if they're high up, he's got pace. If they're going to be deep like they were, he's going to punish them there too, or at least worry them. And it gives our creative players like Mo and Robbo, if it's Tsimikas, if Thiago was playing, Naby comes on. Naby's going to love him, you know. And then Trent, obviously the key guy. They're going to have a field day. So I can't wait for the first game at Anfield. I hope he starts. Could be a glut.
And this is also the key thing that Dan just said about teams having now 2-3 months of footage on Diaz. They haven't got that footage of Nunes playing for us. So now is the time to exploit it before they do.
Yeah, and also, Rhodesy, when you can mix it, when you mix it up now, if we do go back to 4-3-3 with false nine, it has more impact because, you know, we've got the Swiss Army knife. We've got more than one way to hurt a team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bobby
might be better against... If he's going to play, he might be better against some of the sides that are going to play out from the back.
Yeah, Leeds. Nunes
might be an absolute monster against the sides who are going to...
Yeah, Bobby versus Leeds, Arsenal. Yeah, you know the ones. Yeah,
yeah, Leicester. Yeah. Spurs. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not Spurs under contract. Anyway.
True.
I just wanted to give a shout out to AI subscriber Sebastian Wickenberg. He might even be listening live, actually. Seb. But yeah, he did a really good I retweeted it from the UP Twitter account earlier today. He's basically got the FB ref data because it's by position where you can isolate when a player's been playing as a DM rather than as a centre mid, and he looked at Henderson over the last four seasons for when he's playing as a DM, his pass completion is 80th percentile amongst all other DMs. So and his completion rate there is 87%. From when he's playing as a DM. But when he's playing as a centre mid, his pass completion is only 35%. So he's only 35th percentile compared to all other centre mids. And he's not even that creative as a centre mid compared to other centre mids. So yeah, there's a big drop there. And just in terms of the contrast of the two roles. So thank you for that, Sebastian.
Nice one.
And oh, actually, so the last bit, the 10% drop between his completion rates, 87% as a DM and 77% as a CM, that's the worst of all players playing both positions. Yowks, yowzers. Oh, that might be the top five leagues or something.
Ouch.
So, yeah, there's a significant difference statistically to Henderson's numbers in the two positions. Here we go. And Lubo's just put in a live show chat for anybody interested. So, yes, very interesting.
So, Darth, I think, the penalty. Talk to me about the conceding. Obviously, I put it on Matip, but Virgil didn't exactly cover himself in glory here. Normally, he's on his feet. He doesn't go in.
No.
He guides them into Trent. Because Trent was right there. He would have guided him into Trent, blocked him out. But this time, what did he do?
He got done, didn't he? So, he forced a small mistake, didn't he? So, it wasn't good. It wasn't good defensively. My concern was straight away. I got about four people messaging me on Twitter telling me thank you very much for my preview show last week, Gags. Well, I said one of the things that's going to go wrong for us this season is that we're going to have some bad calls on VAR overturns, and we're going to concede penalties, and we had both in game one. So sorry about that.
I said the only absolute regression would be that we would concede a penalty. Nice one.
But just on the VAR overturns, right? That is exactly the kind of thing I was talking about, though, because that Andy Madley decision, right? If he hadn't have given the pen, it wouldn't have been overturned by VAR. Right, if he did give the pen, it wasn't overturned by VAR. Whatever he gave, it wasn't going to be overturned, because the contact was marginal, wasn't it? But I'm going to say, last year we did get those negative decisions overturned, and we were one of the best teams in the league. So there was a little concern of mine. We don't know how all these things work overall, but yeah, I just don't want this to become a thing. Where we're in 10 games in, and we're saying yet another. We have had three or four shitty VAR calls which haven't been overturned and that kind of stuff. Anyway.
So, let's go on to... Any...
We should get Si to talk about Van Dijk, it wasn't great, was it, Si? I know you said Mitrovic flopped, belly flopped, I think you said on Twitter.
Well, do you know what? It's a little bit like the goal with Trent. That it was the worst version of Virgil. It still wasn't a foul. It's as simply as I would put it. It wasn't a foul, and under the rules of this season, definitely not a penalty.
Yeah, the high bar thing should have been applied, shouldn't it?
The level of physicality involved, that doesn't count. That without a shadow of a doubt, there was contact of one knee on the other knee, but it was already mid-dive. And the way I would task the referee to think about this is, would Mitrovic have been on the floor if when he looked at the ball, it wasn't already at Trent's feet? That's the only reason it was a penalty, because Trent was there.
Yeah.
Trent had already got the ball, which means that Virgil should have known this and not made the challenge in the first place.
Yeah.
I know he pulled out of the challenge, but he actually... Virgil, it happens maybe three times a season, it's never inside the box, where he is unbalanced and makes a bad judgment call. And the bad judgment call was to send him that way, and I'm going to make a tackle here. And then he made the right choice, decided not to. But by that stage, it was too late. He'd already put his leg out for Mitrovic to fall over. But it shouldn't be a penalty.
But once it's given, you can't overturn it. Are we agreed on that?
No, because why can't you overturn it?
Stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid. It should be overturned. If you.
But there are the rules. He's right. Dan's right. It can't be overturned.
Yeah.
Pathetic.
Yeah. So, yeah, a shitty VAR call, and we were on the wrong end of it, I'm afraid. And it was, as we said on the preview pod, when you get shitty VAR calls, they nearly always impact the match result.
Yeah, exactly. And then we go across the other side and we get the best assist in the world ever.
I don't even know how that happened. What did it happen? How did it work, Gags? You tell me.
he just didn't expect it. I'll be honest with you. I don't think he expected the ball to come through, because I think he gets a flick from... Ream, is it, on the way in? And and that's what throws him off a little. So, but then he's trying to stop. He's not trying to shoot. He's trying to stop or something, and it just comes off his foot. Literally, he stops and stumbles, and it comes off his foot. Thank God Mo Salah is, like, the most reactive footballer ever, and he just taps it in.
100%. Like, he has to switch feet as well. It's amazing how quick he does it.
Yeah, Mo's next level, man. I'm telling you, this season, he's going to be fucking next level. And everyone's going to be pointing to Nunes, but Mo is going to love it. He just looks like a different player to me. Just looks different, happier, and fucking ready to go. If the right players are on the pitch that make the system suit Mo, I mean, I can't believe a fucking football club wouldn't do that. First off, we didn't. Second half, all of a sudden, Mo's in the game, and we should be thrashing them. If it wasn't for that pen, you know, we should be thrashing them. We would have, honestly, they would have caved. But then, what happens next after that goal? And this is something that I think we haven't discussed. What the fuck happens that last 15 minutes? We don't have a shot, apart from hitting the bar. We don't create nothing, guys. What went on in that last 15 minutes from 80 minutes on? What you know?
We just had a shot from Henderson, yeah?
Yeah, what was going on there? It was like the...
I think they brought on about
Euros, the ladies' Euros final. They just wasted a lot of time.
They were very good game management. Again, Dave mentioned this on the post-match raw. Their game management was brilliant. They were lying down. They were just take a throw in, bringing on subs at 2 minute intervals that takes a minute and a half. We like it when we do it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. If that's the explanation, just breaking the game up, then fair enough. We didn't do enough. Again, something that we need to look at, because that last 10-15 minutes, it should have been an onslaught, should have been a siege.
It should, yeah.
You know? So, it just wasn't the case. Darth, any other discussion points you would like to go through?
No, Nunes only had 2 touches in the side of the Fulham half in... and none in the box after that in that last 15 minutes.
My only final discussion point would be for anyone who tracks different models. Some of the models in this game are absolutely off the scale. So Fantasy Football Scout, or Opta as it is, had us at 1.2, and then there were 4 other models it had us at 2.3 and above. And then you add Stats Bomb in between at about 1.9, and we discussed it in detail in the group chat, Dan. Yeah. How does the first Nunes big chance go from a 60% chance on Understat to a 6% chance for Opta?
Yes, we're gonna have to email some people at Opta here and just see if they respond and say. Why is the first Nunes shot inside the box 7%? You know, because remember on the preseason on the analytics pod, we talked about OptaVision, the new Opta XG model based off camera tracking data, so it knows the position of every player on the pitch when every shot is taken. And it's come up with 7% for that. I don't know. Yeah, so the range of values on Nunes' 4 shots was quite remarkable. Opta had him as a combined 0.6. Understat had him as 1.7. Infogol 1.5. FB Ref 0.9. And Y Scout 0.8. And I know they're not easy because they're all close to goal and there's a lot of blocks involved and close to the ball contact. But that is a crazy range of values for 4 shots. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
It's definitely going to be one to watch, this new OptaVision model.
That's it is something to track. And like you say, Dan, you don't think that Fantasy Football Scout has the data from the OptaVision rather than
the... No, that's been corrected. I think Old King Cole spotted that the stuff on the analyst website is per 90. So that's why that's that works out.
Richard Cole.
Richard Old King Cole, yeah. Richard Cole.
Yeah. You can start using Discord usernames for people that stat swear words.
Yeah. You're going to need to talk about the injuries, though, aren't you, Gags? Now, I say about
it. Well, we've just injuries. Something just popped up there from James Pearce. Thiago facing up to 6 weeks out with hamstring injury. Si, your thoughts, and also, how long does it take this boy to get back up to speed?
Pierce can suck my balls.
What the hell, man?
Can I just quickly go back to what Darth was just saying, and with the XG stuff? I think the biggest difference in that, what Dan was saying, the biggest difference in the models there is one shot from Darwin, which is 0.58, it's only a shot on Understat, and it's not a shot on any of the other sites. And so that's a massive value swing, because it was where Hendo chipped it, and I'm not sure if he headed it to himself or it got off the top of the centre back and it dropped, and then it ended up with a block shot supposedly, and I don't think he ever had a shot off. I think that's the biggest difference in all of the values.
That was 0.46. 0.58 was the goal tie, but you're right. 0.46.
Right, okay, yeah, 0.46. Yeah. So still a huge chance. Yeah, and I don't think it was. I don't think it was a chance. To go back to the injury thing, I don't think he or anybody else knows. It wasn't it's a grade one hamstring strain. It's worst case scenario is 6 weeks. So the fear was it was a grade two and probably it was getting on between 60 and 70% tear, which is a serious hamstring injury. And that's up to it's probably up to 12 weeks out. This is not that. This is the best case scenario of this. It was a hamstring twinge, and they hope with massage and rehab over the next couple of weeks that he'll be back to go in 2 or 3 weeks. The worst case scenario is six. And so you believe in a newspaper dickhead who wants people to click on his stuff because that's how they work.
Can we just talk, rather whether it's 2 weeks, 4 weeks, or 6 weeks, can we just talk about the injuries in the squad, please, Si? Because you are remarkably blasé about our injuries. You said to me and Gags that it's not a concern. Is that true?
Well, the Thiago thing is going to make me feel worse. But all of the others, I'm not worried about at all. It's not a trend of anything in particular.
But you're saying the volume of injuries now in the number of players who are injured.
I honestly don't know. It's not a worry to me because they're minor injuries. The only ones I ever cared about were Jota and Keita. Keita wasn't injured; he was ill, and he's back. He's actually trained. He's trained for 3 years in a row. He's fine. He's the least one I care about of the centre backs. He'll be fine.
Wow.
We've got three great centre backs. He's not a game changer.
You told us on the busiest pod, we're starting the busiest schedule in history on August the 27th for 2.5 months. Literally 2 games a week, Monday. And
centre back is the least intense position on the pitch.
Okay.
And he'll be back for most of it.
Okay, so even though we've got 7 players out injured or 8, depending on Okay, so you're still.
That's what I'm going on about.
We've got.
I even saw one of the journos said we had 10 players out. It's hyperbole. It's the stuff that we hear all the time where Man United have got 15 players injured and their own manager couldn't name 8 of them because they're 17.
So like, Simi and Keita are back. Yeah, definitely.
Simi and Keita are already back in back training.
Yeah, okay, great. So that's 2. So it's Jota, Konate,
Jota and Thiago and Konate are really the 3 first teamers. Nobody loves CJ more than me, but I'm not faffing around here. Of the actual first teamers with real
minutes.
Like, yeah, these are first team rotation players.
Yeah, and Ox is inconsequential in it at the end of the day. Ox was never
Ox
playing
is
anyway.
Nothing. No. Yeah. Jesus.
Well, when you played 2 games a week for 2 months with 5 subs, you definitely would have got some. Anyway, that's just me. But so, are we going to get any of these players back before we embark on this intense, insane schedule period?
Almost all of them.
Even Konate, dude.
No one's saying
anything. I don't know what you guys think is wrong with him.
Well, no one's saying anything.
Talked about like he's torn his lateral posterior corner.
Yeah, but there's no information out there, dude. What are we supposed to expect?
So why are you thinking the worst?
Because
when Liverpool do shit like this, it fucking turns out to be the worst.
I remember
something you don't know about with me, who doesn't know anything about it, and you're taking the darkest of all angles, and I'm not.
Remember when Kloppo said that Henderson had a bruise and he was out for 3 months.
But they haven't said anything. Yeah, he lied, yeah.
Yeah.
Hendo's a pussy.
Why? You say, why do you not trust them? Because they're fucking lie. Don't trust a liar.
The
optimal position for a manager when you're talking about injuries is to make it look as bad as possible. You don't want to give opposition the thought that the player's coming back soon. You want to make it look as bad as possible, don't you?
So, bottom line is they're just
bullshitting.
Bottom line is, site you don't for Palace and United, you don't see any issues.
No, okay. Thiago being injured. See, I'm arguing for the light out of all of this, right? All of the people that are insane over us not winning get me arguing with them. When fundamentally, I believe not winning against the dross is the worst possible thing that can happen for our season. So I, by principle, believe it was a terrible result. But the context of the season and it being the first game, okay. That you can overcome this, right? The same with these injuries. People are going for the deepest, darkest version of what they think might happen. Not like because it's a list of things, but these aren't a list of terrible injuries. And these aren't a list of terrible injuries to any of our top eight players until after the game, we had one of our top eight players. That's the devastating thing to me, is that Thiago is going to be missing games. But he was always going to miss games. That we have him down for 3,000 minutes. That means he misses 2,000 minutes.
We always do as Pets.
How many minutes did he have last year?
2.6.
Yeah. Oh, we always do his best pods gags when we drop points. And size stepped up here because I think the overreaction is ridiculous.
The underlying,
Alisson out for 3 months, I'm with you. But I think what Si said at the start of the pod was the players that were injured, other than maybe Jota, none of them start. And none of them are for long term.
I think we have to accept that Thiago's a luxury, and that this is the way it's going to be with him. Yeah, he's going
to. No, why do we have to have some story? Why do we have to create this little this?
Because the transfer window's still open. Box?
He gets injured easily, doesn't he? Though
before the season, before the season, we had him down as between 2,500 minutes. And absolute data. Best case scenario is 3,000 minutes. Nothing changed.
Yeah, that's what we'll probably still end up getting, 2,500. Yeah,
exactly. Nothing's
changed. He's never been 38 league games in his career ever. Cags, he's never been that player.
No, I know. Never.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
I was gutted as you. I don't know if anybody loves watching Thiago more than me. And I'm here defending his performance compared to the things that you guys were saying. I just don't agree with you. And I'm still not in any way devastated by any of this. It's the best time of the season. If he's going to miss 3 or 4 weeks, these are the 3 or 4 weeks in the whole season to miss. If we're going to have an injury crisis, fucking do it now when we've got 3 games in 3 weeks.
Yeah, 10 days between games or something, and then yeah, you're right. No midweek games.
I still hate it. Don't care how much sense you make.
What a great line. I'm quoting that, gags. Don't care how much sense you make, Si. I still hate it.
Right, okay. Darth, anything else to finish?
Oh, brilliant. hilariously, the Erik ten Hag honeymoon is over after one game. Anyway, yes, I did enjoy that. It made me laugh on Sunday.
Yeah, if our online fans weren't so fucking ridiculous, you could laugh at how ridiculous Man United fans are, can't you?
Well, fighting in the stands as well, that was just nuts. Anyway, who knows? Yeah, it's hilarious. Hopefully,
can I drop one more data bomb for this that contextualizes the stuff we've talked about with Henderson in this? Building on what Seb says, that his possession control as an 8 in the last 2 years, I went back to fill out, is minus 9.1 as an 8, and it's minus 2.2 as a 6. So it's still not very good as a 6, awful as an 8.
Yeah.
And compared to Thiago, which is 9.45 positive.
And Fab?
For the most creative midfield player. Fab over the last 2 years is just under 3. So you want a 6 to be a negative. You want a 6 to be a 0, basically, or slightly positive. Because you still want him, you don't want him to do anything risky and just get enough of the ball back and keep the game ticking over.
Fab's still fine.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the reason why he shouldn't be playing the 8, you know, end of the day. So, those are damning at the end, mate. Those are damning numbers, and I think, yeah, you've gone anti-Hendo there. It's not a good way to end the pod for you, mate. Anyway, damn, Cy did it. He crossed the line. Darth, he's joined you on the dark side, mate. You know,
he's joined Dave.
Dave on the dark side. Fucking hell, these anti-Hendo fuckers.
With absolute analysis, so it's...
That's a swear words. Top of the list, anti-Hendoites. Right, I adjust. But can't argue with the numbers, as everybody says. We can't argue with the numbers. Yeah. And then when you add the video on top, it was a shocker. And I think the two players, Bobby... Hendo, and then obviously everybody else who didn't have a great game either on top just made it a not so good start, but some positives in there that we can take, and let's hope the big shagger starts next game and we'll see how much fun we have. So yeah, okay guys, lots there to contemplate and have fun with and take the piss with, but it's a long, long wait to the next game. So, in between, make sure you go listen to Cy's Fatigue Index. There's probably going to be an old school with a lot of shouting and not much sense. We'll do that soon as well. And there's plenty of others post-match. I think there'll be a special, very, very special Moly on the Spot, I think, this week. Fingers crossed. So, that'll be a bit of fun. And, there's loads going on. Make sure you keep... stay with us, keep supporting us, check out the sponsors that appear on before the pods as well. If you're listening for free, please do go and support us like that as well. And that Athletic green stuff is pretty special shit, by the way. Honestly, I feel very good nearly 2 months in, so make sure you check that out as well. But yeah, apart from that, have a great week. Thanks to the guys, the A team, and up the fucking Reds.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.